Accession number 30062, reel 8.
And there were defensively, any defensive operation by MTBs and MGBs by forming a line offshore to look for these, not for go out and find, but to lie and wait for them to come, was always called a ZIS patrol. And but they were always reckoned to be worse than going underway out the coast. And alternately, we did that for several nights. And always the bombing at nights was worse because you were much more likely to be. But in fact, they only ever hit a couple of the short boats or damaged the short boats, mostly near misses. And we got quite used to these fearsome attacks by Fokker Wolfs and Junkers. And I haven't tried to carry in my mind, although they're in my books, we did, in fact, I think, at least two aircraft we managed to shoot down, because we had a marvellous gunner on the Twin Oerlikon named Happy Day.
I remember.
And Happy Day turned out to be a crack shot using what was known in the Navy as eye shooting, which was the firing ahead of the aircraft. And
we talked about that in detail, didn't we?
And yeah. The cartwheel on sight on the guns, and they'd all been tracked to those sum ratings had been trained in how to use that exactly.
Can you just describe it for me again?
Yes, the Navy had this marvellous thing, a dome. It was called the dome, in which they'd put up these instruments where you pretend you're in the cockpit or you're in the gun, and there are pictures of the aircraft being flashed onto the dome as the sky, and you had to all the time see where you would sight. You've got to first of all know or have some idea how fast it was going, and then you'd work out the number of concentric circles that you would fire ahead of it for each your estimation of the speed. And if you got it right, your bullets from your machine gun or cannon, as we had, would be just right for hitting the thing as it reached that point. But it's a very inexact science until you get very, very good at it, when it becomes an exact science.
And Happy Day had got to that point.
He had. But of course nowadays it's all done by radar, and quite automatically they link on to an aircraft, they enter up a speed, and the gun automatically fires ahead. So the first few days of Sicily were like that. It was pretty grim, but everyone kept in good heart. I can tell you one lovely story about the next little stage, because we went up, we did our patrols, and we never in fact met any surface ships at all. Spent hours and hours scouring this area. Usually you were either on the Sicily side or you were told to be on the Italian side, and some boats would go up either side. And there were these huge shore batteries on the coast, which could straddle the whole of the bay. And two of our we had four flotillas there altogether by this time, so that was 20. Should have been 30 boats roughly, but they weren't always that number, and we all shared the duties on those operations. And two of the groups, the flotillas, the patrol units that were up, in fact had actions with the with E-boats that were sent to do just that job. And on one night there was one with U-boats when one of the short boats managed to torpedo a U-boat, which was quite incredible, especially as it arrived so suddenly that the skipper of the MTB found himself having to go astern before firing his torpedoes, something had never been done before. Suspect a lot of good luck had been involved.
I wonder, can you very just quickly for a minute or two, can you just give me a thumbnail sketch of a typical patrol, just the procedure for a typical
patrol? Yes, indeed. Well, you would be going along to a selected patrol area, and you'd have everyone on deck, the closed up. You had to be all on there because, except for perhaps a few supernumerary people like the loaders of guns, who could easily get back up to their guns, but the gun captain, who would be strapped into his firing position. Because if you're in a turret, which is movable by
hydraulics,
yes, can move his turret, and then it moves his gun wherever it wants to go. The 6-pounder, the huge gun that I probably described beforehand, was called by the Canadians a goose gun. Was a 6-pounder, but it was built in 1917, and it was trained by bicycle wheel, or something very similar anyway. We always called it the bicycle wheel, and its elevation was sort of, so both ways, you had one man on doing this and one man doing that. That fired a big projectile, but everyone had their eyes skinned looking for any enemy craft. You always knew which boats were out with you because that had been decided beforehand. And as I say, we never in our case met, but boats, two of our D boats, dog boats, the same class as us, were hit by shells and sunk. So in that case you probably lost half your crew, because either they were in the explosion, or if they were thrown into the sea and then not could not be seen, but a lot of them would be able to climb. We had the old life raft, and everyone had their life jackets on, although they were very simple at first, just a thing round here.
Round the waist.
Yeah. Then they became much more sophisticated, more like the Mae West later on. But at first it was all very, very simple indeed.
Did they actually do the job or not?
They would have kept you up, but not unless they kept your head up where it ought to be, you know, and that sort of thing. So that carried on, that program carried on for 3 weeks. But by this time we were working, I'd forgotten to say, we had taken the port of Augusta and the port of Syracuse, which was the ancient port that's extremely well known. But Augusta isn't as well known, but it was a huge artificial harbour, about a mile wide. It's one of those that's, because there's a huge sea wall being built round with an opening for ships, and it could take large ships. And we had the job sometimes of bringing in those ships and showing them where they'd got to berth. And occasionally, of course, if there was an air raid going on at the same time, it was all pretty exciting and lots of colours and all the rest of it going on.
You said as well sometimes when you were escorting the bigger ships that they would invite you on.
Oh yes, well yes, that it did happen out in Algiers where we were alongside a cruiser, and they told us that if the crew needed to use their canteen, you know, they had a naffy canteen on board. Could come aboard and they could have a shower, and the same thing was offered to the officers. But big ships are very hospitable like this. You mustn't forget, I mustn't forget to tell you about my final thing in the war, because that involves hospitality.
I'll make a note.
But there we are. We finally, on about the 28th of July, Sicily fell because the US Army had come right round the north, including some US PT boats operating up there, but we'd never met them yet at that stage, and we were all round the south, and we all on either side of Mount Etna, really, and then we came together at Messina.
Yeah, you were saying before that Mount Etna was a navigator's dream. that you all navigated by Mount Etna. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, it was absolutely marvellous because all our navigation was dead reckoning, which depends on being able to take bearings at different times or on different places, and then the lines cross and you know where you are, roughly. And you know your speed and your course, and you, having got your bearing, a fix we call that, and then using course and speed, you can keep your line going. And when the captain suddenly decides to send you off at a roar, he shouts out, "I'm altering course at 16 knots to such and such a thing," and you immediately jot it down and then put your new line along. And put a little mark for the time, you know, all the time. So being a navigator in a war situation is quite different from doing a passage when you can draw your lines beautifully. But if he's changing directions all the time. When we reached Messina, by then, the German army largely had managed to be taken across the 2 miles. Is your classical education enough to tell you about Scylla and Charybdis?
It's not. I know the names, but I don't know the story.
Well, I'm blowed if at this stage I can remember which is the cliff and which is the whirlpool.
Oh, no, it's all come back. It's the Odyssey. No? Is it the Odyssey? No, is it in the Odyssey? It's the
yes.
Okay, it's ringing bells.
Aeneas,
yeah,
but they'd got across this because they had complete control of the northern end because of these vast guns, 15-inch guns and enormous things, you know. But they'd got across there, and they were trying to get bedded into the toe of Italy, and then trying to rebel the obvious thing, which was the Allies were going to get across as well and join in the push going northward. So, it became a new phase of the war completely. From the point of view of coastal forces, I remember very well the only thing about Messina that I particularly remember, because it became a forward base for a very short time, was that Gracie Fields arrived, and we all went to this place where a big car park or tank park or lorry park or something, and she got up on top of a lorry, a flatbed, and did a marvellous, that we all remembered it because it was so lovely, and in war for our Gracie. But we also heard that Bobby Allen, who'd moved to form this advanced base from Bowen, he'd come to Augusta and formed the base there.
So when he did that, everything got packed up into lorries?
Yes, on a landing raft and brought, you see.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was mobile all the time. Sometimes they called them Coast Force Mobile Base, but if they settled in a place, it was an advanced base. They decided, they were told, where the next objective was to have an advanced base, and they were forming up as a convoy, a well-supported convoy, because it had two or three flotillas of MTBs and two landing craft, tank landing craft, with all these lorries on board, and we were all going together across to a new base called Maddalena, which was an island on which there was an Italian naval base. It was all mixed up this time. It was an incredible mixture of emotions because the Italians, having lost Sicily, decided politically, the government decided to surrender. And So their ships were immediately, that was part of the agreement, were taken over by the Allies. And they took them gradually from all the ports to Malta, and the whole Italian fleet was off Malta. And some of our small MTBs escorted them into Malta. Or off Malta, actually, St. Paul's Bay and that sort of thing, part of just off the coast of Malta. But it had been this Italian base, and we were going to form a new coastal force base. This island was between Corsica and Sardinia in the Strait of Bonifacio. And in Bonifacio, we tried to find a bit later, which was a little port on the south coast of Corsica. But when you went along off the coast, it was a cliff like this, and you couldn't see it at all. But as you got closer and closer, you could suddenly see that it was a little entrance and then turned inside. The most exciting place to go into. We had to do that later when we were on another operation. But not to digress.
Very briefly, you said something about getting onto the boats, some of the Italian boats. Didn't you go on to some of the Italian boats?
Oh, yes, yeah. Going into Augusta Harbour, that's right, yes. One of our boats got stranded, grounded inside Augusta Harbour on a sandbank because nobody had any charts at all of the inside of Augusta Harbour, so it wasn't anyone's fault, it just happened. You found out there was a sandbank there. We went in as well, and among the first to go in, and we found an anchored Italian ship. I have, in fact, among my tiny souvenirs, because we went aboard this thing, it was totally deserted, the crew had gone, and there were all sorts, the crew had left just like that, and there were trinkets about everywhere, and I picked up this thing looking for anything of security value, any plans or anything, codes or anything else like that. But it wasn't anything like that. It was a box in which there were several medals. And I discovered I kept one of them afterwards, because it was no use to man nor beast afterwards. And apparently it turned out it was a what did they call it? A fruitful. In other words, if you have more children than most,
you got a medal.
You were helping your country. I never looked into it more than that, actually. Now, we mustn't digress too much.
I'm sorry, I'm sidetracking you.
We went to or Maddalena and got settled in there. And Bobby Allen's base was there. And it was quite a large little town, a very barren area indeed. It was, people compared it afterwards with Scarpa Flow up in the Orkneys, where the Grand Fleet, the main British fleet, had to lie in safety to be a deterrent force to be dispatched anywhere into the Atlantic or the North Sea, and that was their base. And it became a byword in the Navy that the battleships spent all their time swinging at their anchors, you know, doing nothing on the whole, which would have been horrible sort of thing. It's much better to be active. And we started doing operations across to the west coast of Italy. Now, this was really the start of proper operations, because all the rest of it was very well, straightforwardly just a job to do, with you're told what to do and then you came back, like those few two or three or four patrols we did between the end of June and the 9th of July. We went over towards the landing area. We didn't want to let on that obviously we couldn't be too active, because that would have been given some sort of game away. But they were obviously, like, just like Normandy, they were trying to decide where the enemy were going to come. They didn't succeed very well, actually. I don't think the Germans had much say in the matter, probably. You know, who knows? Because the Italians were still around and at that stage. It was soon after we'd begun, it was actually on the 14th of October, that as one of our operations we were sent to the island of inside the island of Elba. There is a little channel between the island and the mainland on the west coast of Italy called the Piombino Channel. Piombino being the small port that's the end of the ferry across to the mainland. We were told, three of us were told to go there and to set up a patrol to look for enemy shipping that was around this area, because nearly all shipping had to come down through if it was coming to from the north to reinforce the German army further south. It would come down through that little narrow strait. And so we were sent there, and we started off with three boats, and eventually one of them had engine trouble and had to go back to Maddalena, and the senior officer of the flotilla of the unit was somebody we didn't know at all, really, and he called out to Corny. He said, we used to get close together and just put up a megaphone and shout across, which was the easiest way of doing it, that he was going to go, apparently there was a likelihood of finding something, he was going to go north and create a diversion and see if we found anything, he would then join and we'd have two chances of finding the enemy. And this is where this business of of searching for an enemy that comes in, because the usual pattern for a patrol, if it's well rehearsed beforehand, and this wasn't, because we didn't know them from Adam, this boat, at all. They were one of the other flotillas, first time we'd ever been with them.
Yes, and you were saying last time you would go out to do something quite particular, so you would know exactly what you were doing.
Yes, exactly. The captains would have a gathering and decide exactly how they were going to play it. But this was quite sudden, out of the blue. And, the normal thing would be to patrol together and try to get down moon so that it's terrible. Up moon and down moon don't mean anything, but up moon the enemy is in the, you know, clearly illuminated, and you're the other way. Down moon is you're in darkness comparative. We would always try to get down moon so that we're looking to see if there's any enemy craft inside our vision. But it wasn't very long before somebody, one of the lookouts, sighted a dark something out there and reported it, and we all looked at it through our binoculars, and it was certainly a ship, and there weren't any British ships there as well. So very quickly we were all ready, and we actually opened fire on it when it got fairly close, and immediately it replied, but our shooting was very much better than theirs, as we expected, because our crew had been trained pretty well, it caught on fire quite quickly, and it turned out to be about the same size as us and called a flak ship, which meant that it was a gunboat, really. So, but that was done for. The searchlights came on, both on Elba and the mainland, sweeping around. So we quietly moved away a bit from those. And then, just as this had all happened, one of the crew reported, a lookout reported, another ship, sir. And then we all said, well, is it this other 636 or is it the enemy? And we challenged it and then waited for a little while. And then suddenly, instead of a reply to the challenge, because the challenges and replies were changed every day, you weren't likely to be tricked by anything there. He opened fire on us. And Corney immediately said, right, open fire. And the first shell from the six-pounder hit the engine room of the target, and it blew up. And then, of course, as it illuminated, it was clearly 636. And we all were horrified, of course. But then, suddenly, someone reported another one, enemy craft. And this time, just as we'd begun to pick up people swimming in the water with their life jackets on, there were no rafts launched at all. And we went and we opened fire on this other craft, which had to be an enemy craft. And we got that on fire and sinking. Then we went back to the 636 and pulled out as many as we could. And I told you this, I think I'll tell you a story about it. I met many, many years later at a reunion, and a chap came up to me and he said, "Hello, sir. You were the midshipman, weren't you?" "No, I was a subby by then. I was made a subby just before Sicily."
"Sorry, a subby?"
Sub-lieutenant.
Sub-lieutenant, of course, yeah.
When you're absolutely just 20, you're made a sub-lieutenant, or you were then.